Radio Prague News.
Economist and Prague Spring reformer Walter Komarek has died at the age of 82. Former head of the anti-corruption police unit was found to have violated protocol. And the Czech Republic lost to the Swiss in the knockout quarterfinal round of the Hockey World Championship. Economist and Prague Spring reformer Walter Komarek has died in Prague at the age of 82, having been hospitalized for a number of days following heart surgery. Mr. Komarek, a Holocaust survivor, played an important role in the reform wing of the Communist Party during the Prague Spring in the late 1960s and was an active participant of the Velvet Revolution in 1989. In the mid-1960s, Mr. Komarek also served as an advisor to Che Guevara in Cuba. He was elected as an MP for the Social Democratic Party in 1992 and a decade later was named the party's honorary chairman. President Zeman, who has recently visited Mr. Komarek at the hospital, said that he was one of the most important political figures in the Czech Republic since 1989. An internal police investigation has revealed that the former head of the anti-corruption unit, Tomáš Martinec, violated protocol when he showed Prague High State Attorney Lenka Bradáčová evidence compiled against her strange husband. In mid-April, Ms. Bradáčová asked the police president Martin Červíček to investigate possible leaks from the anti-corruption unit to the media and later told a source that she believed Mr. Martinec was preparing a smear campaign against her. Mr. Martinez denied any wrongdoing but resigned from his post in late April. Following the result of the initial investigation, disciplinary proceedings were initiated on Wednesday, although the police president stressed that there was no evidence that Mr. Martinez had committed a crime. Following a proposal from the Deputy Prime Minister Karolina Pík, the Czech government decided to increase the budget of the police anti-corruption unit by 69 million crowns. The Lidem Party chairwoman indicated that the technical equipment of the unit is in a deplorable state. Around 39 million crowns from the newly allocated funds will be used to purchase new vehicles and more than 9 million for new computers. More than 20 million will be used to expand the unit's staff. Thomas Maria Messer, who headed the Solomon Guggenheim Museum for 27 years, died on Wednesday in New York at the age of 93. Messer, who was born in Bratislava, moved to Prague when he was 4 years old. He left Czechoslovakia to go to the United States on a study grant 16 years later in September 1939. He enlisted in the American Army during the Second World War and served in Europe, but returned to live in the United States afterwards. Mr. Messer became the director of the Guggenheim Museum in New York in 1961 and is credited with acquiring a number of large and important private art collections, as well as facilitating the opening of the Peggy Guggenheim Museum in Venice. The Czech Republic lost to the Swiss 2-1 in an emotional quarterfinal match at the Hockey World Championship in Sweden. The Swiss got in their first goal within the first 7 minutes of the match thanks to the Czech defenseman Marek Židlický, who ricocheted the puck after the goalkeeper's successful save back into the net. The Swiss surged ahead with a second goal in the next round. Then the Czechs used the first power play in the third period to their advantage when Zdeněk Kutlak scored the team's first and only goal. The Czechs lost their chance at a medal this year, making this the first time they will be heading home without a World Cup title since 2009. The 6th annual Czech Beer Festival started on Thursday. The 16-day event, which highlights the best Czech-brewed beers, is taking place at the Holešovice Exhibition Grounds in Prague. Entrance is free every weekday before 2 p.m. Live concerts will be held in the evenings for the duration of the festival. And as for the weather, it will be mostly sunny in the upcoming days, with possible rain showers at the end of the week. Daytime temperatures will be between 24 and 26 degrees Celsius. I'm Masha Walensky, and that's all for the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. My name is Jan Richter. Coming up in today's program, under media pressure, organizers of a martial arts show in Prague cancel a match involving a fighter covered in Nazi tattoos. Then, Czech Radio celebrates 90 years of broadcasting, and Radio Prague marks the anniversary as well. And later in Panorama, US pianist Diana Fanning appears at this year's American Spring Music Festival in the Czech Republic. All that and more coming your way, so please stay with us. The organizers of a martial arts show in Prague have bowed to pressure from the media and cancelled an appearance by a Hungarian fighter who's covered from head to toe in Nazi tattoos. Attila Petrovsky, a mixed martial arts fighter from Hungary, had been due to appear at the event on Friday. Now organizers are looking for a replacement. Rob Cameron has more.
Friday's Heroes Gate martial arts tournament offers an evening of pumped-up aggression for those looking to blow off a little steam. A combination of mixed martial arts, kickboxing and boxing, Heroes Gate is the 10th such event, heavily advertised and held under the auspices of the Prague 9 District Council. This year, however, organisers found themselves with a little too much publicity. The Roma news agency Romia.cz reported that one of the MMA fighters on the bill, Attila Petrovsky, was a Hungarian neo-Nazi. Photos of the semi-naked fighter seem to confirm this. His chest features large tattoos of Hitler and a swastika, and the words "Death of the Jews" is scrawled across his abdomen. The photo quickly made the transition from Romeo to Facebook and then the mainstream media, and Attila's fate was sealed. Ladislav Kutil is the event's promoter. Mr. Kutil told Radio Prague his appearance had been cancelled due to media pressure on both Heroes Gate and its sponsors, which include gyms, car dealerships and even Pepsi. The poster also carries the logos of the City of Prague and Czech Television, but both categorically denied supporting the event, and some sponsors who did threatened to withdraw their support. Former journalist Josef Bolshka is an expert in the Czech neo-Nazi scene.
Let me tell you one thing. I believe that the main problem isn't whether the guy has a tattoo or not, but the main problem is that they knowingly invited a Nazi guy to compete. They would provide him money that basically equals to support of neo-Nazism. On the other hand, there are the number of prominent Nazis in the mixed martial arts circles in at least in Czech Republic. Those are promoted on the websites of the gyms. They do trainings. So I think there's a deeper connection between these two worlds, and it's not going away too soon, I think.
We should stress that you can be a fan or even a fighter, you can be a kickboxer or a mixed martial arts fighter and not have any Nazi sympathies at all. I mean, I think they said that in the past such tournaments have been attended by Vietnamese fighters, by Romani fighters. So I guess it's not the exclusive preserve of the neo-Nazi underground, is it?
No. It's absolutely not. I believe that the vast majority of fighters and of gyms are okay, and they have no inclination towards neo-Nazism. The problem is that they know that there is a number of Nazis among them, some of them very prominent, and they don't consider it to be a problem. They just don't care, and I believe that it sets a very, very bad example.
Heroes Gate had since released a statement claiming that Attila Petrovsky's Hungarian manager had assured them the fighter was no longer an active neo-Nazi, that the tattoos were the result of a troubled youth, and he was now, through kickboxing, taking his life in a new direction, which, said the promoters, was what martial arts was all about. A cursory glance at Mr. Petrovsky's Facebook page, however, would suggest otherwise, as he's pictured in a T-shirt of the British skinhead band Screwdriver, whose leader Ian Stewart co-founded the violent neo-Nazi movement Blood and Honour.
Rob Cameron reporting. Coming up next, this weekend we'll be celebrating 90 years since the first regular radio broadcast in Czechoslovakia, and we'll be bringing you a special program. David Vaughan has now joined me in the studio. David, you've been working with a group of Prague journalism students to discover some of the forgotten gems hidden in the radio archive. So can you tell us more about what will be in the program on Saturday?
That's right. I teach a course at the Anglo-American University here in Prague on the history of journalism. And the idea came to me because I knew that there were literally hundreds of recordings here in the radio archive in English, some of them going back even 80 years. And the great majority of them have never been either analysed or, in fact, even listened to. And you find that when you listen to them, it's a little bit like travelling in time. They offer you these intriguing and sometimes unexpected and often very moving insights into the history of this country over the decades. And so what we did, we began the project with the students choosing recordings from the Radio Archives digital catalogue, and they had to try and gauge from the brief catalogue entries, which consist normally of just a name, a catalogue number, and sometimes a short description, whether or not they'd be interesting. And they listened to the recordings and weeded out the less interesting ones, and then found out more about some of them, and who's talking, when, and why, and in what context.
So what did your students actually come up with?
Well, in Saturday's programme, we're going to be hearing the results, the most interesting results. We'll be hearing extracts from some of the recordings combined with the insights and observations that the students made. For example, we'll have Czechoslovakia's most celebrated pre-war feminist, Františka Plaminková, appealing for reason on the eve of World War II. We'll also have a taste of old gravel voice, which you certainly hear in the recording. That's General Harmon as he gets ready to pull American forces out of Plzeň in 1945. And we've got the legendary Czechoslovak radio correspondent from the 60s in the United States, Karel Kinzel, talking to the first African-American to study at the University of Mississippi, and that's back in 1963. And on top of that, we've also got a moving encounter with a six-year-old girl back in 1948, and she was home after being taken from her mother at just 4 months old. And to end with, we've got a friend of Charlotte Masaryk, the American wife of Czechoslovakia's first president, recalling their friendship. And we've got American students way back in 1937 describing their impressions of Prague. And here's a short extract from the programme, and we'll hear a little bit from those students back in 1937.
I researched what was going on in 1937, and Europe at that time was becoming a kind of a powder keg for political issues, and Hitler was making a name for himself in Germany and stuff like that. So on one hand, it was a very simple recording of how nice it was in Europe, but at the same time, I think the subtext was that I think a lot of Americans were curious as to how Europe actually was. Because of this, he was reporting back and saying, you know, we want to support them because they're actually good, well-run countries. And America ended up supporting the Allied side of Czechoslovakia during World War II.
The air in Prague is free because democracy has survived here, and the desire for peace is ever present. This is an interlude in a war-torn Europe, a nation whose people will not easily surrender their freedom nor encroach upon their neighbors. And from America, where too the people cherish liberty and peace, we could bring not merely a message of good feeling, but a sense of identity with the hopes of young Czechs.
Well, David, that does sound really interesting, so I'm sure our listeners will enjoy the Saturday special program marking that important anniversary in the history of Czech radio. That was David Vaughan. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And on Saturday, Czech radio marks the anniversary with a series of events in the radio's main building on Prague's Vinohradská Street. These include an Open Doors Day, which will give visitors a rare chance to look inside the studios and perhaps talk to some of the authors of their favorite programs. There will also be concerts held throughout the day, and you're all welcome to join in the festivities. Marking the occasion, Radio Prague will return on shortwaves for one day only on Saturday, so make sure you tune in. But now, here is a new edition of Panorama by Daniela Lazarová.
Organized by the International Dvořák Society, the American Spring Music Festival annually brings internationally renowned soloists and music ensembles to a broad audience in the Czech Republic. From April 8th to July 4th, concerts and masterclasses are taking place in dozens of towns and villages around the country. Among this year's performers is pianist Diana Fanning from Middlebury College, Vermont, whose recent piano recital featured music by the Czech composer Leoš Janáček. When she visited Radio Prague studio shortly after the recital, we talked about her passion for a composer whose music many find hard to understand.
The people at the American Spring Festival especially asked me if I would play some Janáček because they had heard my CD on which I've recorded Janáček's great suite for piano On an Overgrown Path. And I was absolutely delighted to do that because Janáček's piano music in the United States does not get played so much. And I love his music, and I feel like I'm kind of an evangelist for Janáček, and I want people to know about it. And so I built this program around Overgrown Path, knowing that that would be the centerpiece. So I decided to start with a beautiful piece by Mozart, his Fantasy in D minor. And I chose that because it's a little bit unusual for Mozart. It's not in the classical sonata form. It's a fantasy, which means you almost have the feeling when you hear this piece that it's what it was like if Mozart sat down at the piano and started to improvise. It starts in a very atmospheric way. It goes in one direction, then it goes in another, full of surprises, full of drama, very unusual, kind of a romantic piece, much more than a classical piece. And I thought that that would be a very good introduction to the Janáček, because the Janáček, for most people, is very unexpected music, and it's very personal. And you probably know that Janáček based his music very much on Czech speech patterns. And so there's this really direct quality of communication in his music that's very beautiful. He also found a lot of inspiration in Czech folk music. And you hear that in the lilting rhythms, the kind of dancey rhythms of the pieces, and the very lyrical, kind of melancholy mood of the melodies. And I thought that was a good combination.
When you first became acquainted with Janáček's music, was it difficult for you to immerse yourself in his compositions? Because some musicians find Janáček difficult to play. Some audiences may find him more difficult to digest. As you say, he's not played as frequently as maybe other composers, even Czech composers. Did you actually have to find out all these things that you now told us in order to better understand what his music is about and how it should be played, how it should be interpreted? Was that a problem for you?
Well, I think it's always very helpful with any composer you play to understand the cultural background of the composer, what kind of traditions he comes out of, who his influences were, who his teachers were, what inspired him, what the era was like, not just artistically, but historically, what was going on politically. All of these things feed into a composer's music just like any artist. You know, you take in your own time, and then this is what comes out, your reaction to it. I came to Janáček's music through the opera. First heard a Janáček opera in the early 90s in New York City at the Met. They were doing Katya Kabanova. And I just instantly felt this incredible communication from this beautiful music. Yes, it was very unusual. It was unlike anything I'd ever heard before. But it really spoke to me. And that's why I decided I really had to find out what there was for piano. It turns out, unfortunately, there's not that much. There are three big pieces, but I just learned them all. I just dove into it. And of course, I did as much research as I could, listened to recordings. One of my favorite recordings is by the great Czech pianist Radoslav Kvapil, whom I was lucky enough to be able to meet on this trip. And, you know, to get an idea of what the tradition is, you know, what it sounds like, what really great Czech piano playing sounds like.
Are your audiences abroad receptive to, easily receptive, for instance, to Janáček's works?
Well, they are. I think it helps that I always like to talk about Janáček before I play. And in the case of Overgrown Path, particularly, his music in this is considered very autobiographical, in that he left behind letters indicating that the first piece in the suite, Our Evenings, had to do with his childhood, and that there's a specific scene in that first piece of him. He remembers when he was 4 years old being carried out of a burning house crying bitterly. And then there's a piece called A Blown Away Leaf, which he wrote about in his letter saying this was a love song.
So what do you envisage when you play
these pieces. The Blown Away Leaf, for instance, which is a beautiful piece. Or the moment where he was carried out of the... Is that what you envisage? Or, you know, do you just sort of tap the mood? Or see colours or images?
Well, I try to create the atmosphere so that what I feel is the emotion behind the music communicates itself to the audience. I have thought a lot about every piece that I play. I spend probably more time away from the piano thinking about the music than actually playing, thinking about what does this music say to me? What is the emotional content of this music? And certainly if you have a little story to go with it, actually I think that's actually nicer for the audience than for me, because it gives them something to hold on to when they hear music that's very unusual, that they've never heard before. But for me, I'm really going for what the music says to me, how it makes me feel, and then trying to find a way to play it so that that feeling will be taken in by the audience, that I really communicate what I feel is the essence of the piece to them. It's hard to put words to it, but it has to do with atmosphere, it has to do with mood, it has to do with the character of the music, and of course, in really good pieces, the character of the music can change very quickly. It certainly does in Janáček. He's constantly, you know, he can very quickly go from a melancholy mood to a very joyful mood, kind of a dancey mood. And you have to capture those subtleties and those nuances of character. And that's what makes it fascinating and what makes it beautiful.
Does it happen to you that after years of playing a certain composition, you find new things in it?
Absolutely, all the time. That's one of the joys of being a musician, that I think the music that you learn is always simmering in your subconscious, and you come back to it, and somehow there are all these beautiful details that you didn't notice before. How is that possible? But there they are. In really great music, there's just so much. And of course, everyone brings their own experience and their own personality and their own talent to a piece of music. And that's why you can go to a music store and you can buy 100 copies of the Waldstein Sonata. And all of them probably have interesting elements in them, because everyone plays the same notes differently depending on what they bring to the music, what they hear in the music. And that makes it endlessly fascinating.
Has your visit to the Czech Republic and your meeting with Czech musicians, and maybe you've heard concerts by Czech musicians, has it been inspirational in any way?
Well, I have to say that last night, my husband and I and our friend Alison Stanger went to hear Rusalka at the State Opera. And this was one of the most beautiful artistic experiences of my life. I feel like I can never see that opera again unless I come back here and see it, because it will never be as beautiful as they performed it last night. The singing, the staging, the dancing, the choral singing was absolutely exquisite. The orchestra had this warm sound that I think must be a Czech sound, a Middle European sound. The woodwinds had such a kind of blended tone. There was just this sense of warmth and wonderful musicianship. The singers were fantastic. The conception of the whole thing, of course, it's a fairy tale. And I've never seen it performed where you just were caught up in the world of enchantment like that was last night. So that was a huge inspiration. And then the night before, we went to hear Libusha at the National Theater. And there again, we were so struck with the beauty of the orchestra. Of course, it's a very different opera, but what was so interesting about that was the celebration of Czech history and the pride in the Czech heroes of the past. And it was really meaningful for me, and I'm sure it must have been for the Czech people in the audience, because, of course, it was scheduled on May 8th, which is the great holiday of the end of World War II, and there were a lot of older people in the audience. And here's this wonderful opera where they're celebrating Czech heroes and Czech nationalism, and the Czech people will conquer all. And I just felt really overwhelmed. I just thought it was a wonderful experience to be there.
And what about the American Spring Festival itself, the way it takes place in towns and villages around the country, goes outside of Prague to bring audiences, these internationally renowned performers, musicians? Do you like that idea? How did you feel to be part of it?
It's a brilliant idea, and I couldn't be more pleased and complimented to be invited to be part of it. I live in a small state in the United States. We have 251 towns in our state, and all of us who live there make an effort to go out into the towns, into the schools. The Vermont Symphony Orchestra a few years ago had a plan called the 251 plan, where they had chamber music or orchestra or something in every single town in the state. And so we kind of think this way in our little state. And it's so important to bring music to people. It's so important to open up this wonderful world of classical music to people who may never have been exposed to it. It's part of the heritage. It's part of our Western culture. And to expose children to it so that they can see that this is out there, I think it's just critical. I'm so delighted to be part of an organization that's doing this in the Czech Republic.
Do you have any plans involving Czech music or the Czech Republic in any way for the future?
Well, I would love to come back and play, of course. And while I was here and had a chance to meet Radoslav Kvapil and his wife Jill, I was able to buy copies of his recordings of all of the Czech piano music. And I can hardly wait to go home and listen to this music, which is largely unknown in the United States. And since I do love the Czech culture so much, the opera, the music, I'm looking forward to hearing these pieces and getting to work myself on learning new pieces by new composers.
Daniela Lazarová was talking there to U.S. pianist Diane Fenning in that edition of Panorama, which brings us to the end of our English language program here on Radio Prague. Just a reminder that all our programs are available online at radio.cz. You can also follow Radio Prague on Facebook and on Twitter. If you have any comments or questions for us, you can easily get in touch. Contact us at email at english@radio.cz or by post to Radio Prague, Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2, the Czech Republic. But for now, from me, Jan Richter, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.